Good afternoon, and welcome to our October board meeting with a pretty interesting and pretty packed agenda. Without further ado, we get to our first topic, which is the comprehensive review of the IFRS for SMEs, and I hand over to Michelle.
Thank you, Andreas. So starting with agenda paper 30A, for financial instruments, the IFRS for SMEs currently permits entities to apply either sections 11 and 12 of the IFRS for SMEs standard in full, or the recognition and measurement requirements of IAS 39 and the disclosure requirements of sections 11 and 12. And this is referred to as a fallback to IAS 39. It's the only instance where the IFRS for SMEs has a fallback to full IFRS requirements. Our agenda paper 30A asks the board to consider whether we should remove the fallback during this second comprehensive review. Now, during the first comprehensive review, the board concluded that consistent with the aim of a standalone simplified standard, it would prefer the only fallback to full IFRS standards to be removed. However, the board decided to retain the fallback to IAS 39, pending consideration of IFRS 9 at a future review and evidence on how frequently the fallback is being used by SMEs. Now, the request for information sought views on how frequently the fallback's used and whether the fallback to IAS 39 should be updated to a fallback to IFRS 9. Our feedback generally supported updating the fallback to IFRS 9 in preference to keeping a fallback to a superseded standard, but most respondents are not aware of SMEs using the fallback to IAS 39. Now, following our project plan for this second comprehensive review, our intention is to apply the board's alignment approach to incorporate the principles and requirements of IFRS 9 to update sections 11 and 12. Now, in doing so, the board will apply this approach to decide on the extent of alignment with IFRS 9 rather than needing a fallback to IFRS 9. So the staff recommend the board propose an amendment to remove the fallback to apply the recognition and measurement requirements in full IFRS standards for financial instruments in sections 11 and 12. This means we'd remove the existing fallback to IAS 39 and not replace it with a fallback to IFRS 9. So I now hand over to the board for a discussion on whether they agree with the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Michelle. And I open it up for comments. Bruce.
Thanks very much. I'm very supportive of the staff's view to remove from IFRS 9 as a fallback, and there's a number of reasons. I think the starting point for me is that, I mean, I wasn't very much in favour to start with, but I think the fact that we've now got a parallel project running where we are looking at subsidiaries for SMEs, those were necessarily the only companies I'd come across who potentially were using the fallback to 39, where there were subsidiaries of listed companies. I think that the other project we're running can take that out of it. Not that that's the deciding factor, but we can take the subsidiaries out and say we dealt with them there, which means now if I look at the SME standard, what are the things I want? To start off with, I think we're wanting this as a standalone standard. And I always felt the fallback means that somewhere along the line, somebody had to have the big books available when they were using this, if they wanted to do that. Secondly, it's not to me a question of whether somebody has complex financial instruments. Even though I do agree that I don't think they're as common in the type of companies using SMEs, but it's not a question of whether they've got them. To me, the question is whether a user of an SME's accounts, who already accept as a very limited group, need the complexity that comes with the reporting of those financial instruments that the SME standard never dealt with. It's just not something I came across in practice almost anywhere where people were using the fallback to start with, so I don't think they were going with that. The other thing I think we need to realize is that if we decide to move this to an IFRS 9 fallback, we've then got to start working on the situation. Well, what happens when we change IFRS 9 or when we issue an IFRIC or an agenda decision or something on IFRS 9 that would potentially impact on the SME standard? Because the problem now becomes, well, what if we're issuing something that impacts another part of the standard or refers to something else? And then we've got all that situation where potentially that stable platform becomes very difficult for companies in terms of what they're looking at. I just don't think it adds a lot of value. I think it's very underutilized. People aren't using it, and that seems to be the feedback from the SMEC. And I just think that we're overcomplicating the standard by having that in there. Also, lastly, with the fact that we've really taken the decision to go in an alignment route means we're going to align the areas we believe in IFRS 9 need to be there already. I just think doing that and then having a fallback to full IFRS 9, I just think is going to overcomplicate something that doesn't need to be there. So, yeah, I would support the staff's view.
Thanks, Bruce. Sue.
I sort of have a conditional acceptance of the staff's recommendation, if that's a thing. So I think it would be good if we could remove the fallback option as a sort of exception to the normal approach in the SME standard. But for me, it doesn't just depend on us considering alignment, it's what the outcome of that alignment assessment is in terms of whether I think it then means that people really do need the fallback to IFRS 9 or not. And so if I give an example, at the moment there's no sort of available for sale type category in the SME standard, and that didn't matter so much if your fallback is IAS 39 because available for sale was sort of a choice. Whereas if you look at IFRS 9 now, the fair value through other comprehensive income category is something you have to apply if you've got particular types of instruments and business models. So for me, it's sort of going to depend on where we draw the line with the alignment. In principle, I think it would be a good outcome. But it's going to depend for me on what's the gap between the information that would be provided applying the sort of simplified version of this of the standard in the SME standard versus the full IFRS 9, and whether I think investors are well served by that or not. So a conditional yes.
Thank you. So I also support the staff recommendation, really very much along the lines that Bruce talked about. I think this would represent a good simplification. If most of the SMEs or the few SMEs that are using this are subsidiaries who are using it for consolidation process, although it's still work in progress, we have to look to the project for IFRS for subsidiaries about public accountability as being the solution for those entities. And again here, I think also that the user group is a very different user group of these accounts. I suspect they come across these things very rarely indeed in terms of the conversations we've had with that group. I would support the recommendation.
Thank you. Tadeo.
Thank you, Andreas. I also support the staff recommendation. I agree with Bruce. I think that we got enough feedback and information to do that. And I also believe the fallback option was a temporary solution as decided in the first comprehensive review. And keep it would also be, let's say, a precedent for other fallback requests during, for example, the second comprehensive review of IFRS for SME. For example, we heard from some respondents that they would like, for example, to capitalize interest, they would like to capitalize development costs. And then if we start just keeping this door open, I mean that the first time that we wrote the standard, we actually in the exposure draft thought about having 27, as it is written in the paper, fallbacks. I mean that it wasn't a good idea, and I think that's the moment to remove it. I fully support the staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Jinchao.
Thank you. I also support staff's recommendation. I think a couple of reasons. First, that I think the intention of developing this IFRS for SME standard is to develop a standalone standard available for those SMEs. So I think remove this fallback to IFRS 9 or is IS 39 consistent with the board's intention. Secondly, I think the design of this standard actually will try to create some kind of stable period for those SMEs, because once we complete this standard, or once we complete the comprehensive review of these standards, we will create several years stable period for those SMEs. If we introduce fallback to IFRS 9 or IS 39 previously, as Bruce said, that we are going to update maybe in the future, update IFRS now frequently. So it's also not consistent with our initial design. And thirdly, I think if we introduce fallback to IFRS 9, it also depends on different jurisdictions, because the timetable of different jurisdictions to introduce IFRS 9 actually different. Some jurisdictions introduce IFRS 9 later. Maybe they adopted IFRS or SME before, IFRS 9 was adopted. So they have to rely on when IFRS 9 will be adopted. For this kind of policy consideration also need to be considered. So from my point of view, return back to our initial intention to keep these standards as a standalone standard, I think it's the right way to to do. So I support the staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. Looks like a home run for you. Can I see a show of hands who supports the staff recommendation, even with conditionality?
12.
Yeah. Good attempt. Next one.
Okay, moving on to agenda paper 30B on hedging. Paper asks the board to consider whether it should propose any changes to the hedge accounting requirements in section 12 of the IFRS SMEs. The request for information sought views on three possible approaches to take during this second comprehensive review. Firstly, was remove the requirements on hedge accounting from section 12 completely. Secondly, retain the existing requirements on hedge accounting in section 12 but unchanged. And thirdly, align the requirements on hedge accounting in section 12 with IFRS 9. Our feedback indicated there is limited application of the hedge accounting by SMEs. Nevertheless, removing the hedge accounting requirements completely from section 12 would disadvantage those SMEs that are currently applying them. Section 12 currently focuses on the types of hedging transactions typically undertaken by SMEs, which keeps the accounting and disclosure simple. And feedback generally indicates these requirements are well understood and sufficient for the needs of users of SME financial statements. Now, the staff think the main benefits introduced by IFRS 9 for hedging, which are to reduce the complexity in IAS 39, and that complexity is not in the model in Section 12, and better reflect risk management activities. We think that these changes may not meet the relevance principle in the board's alignment approach for the types of transactions entered into by SMEs, and hence the information needs of their users. And this is because feedback generally indicates these entities do not have the more sophisticated risk management and hedging strategies, and they have simple financial reporting needs. So for these reasons, the staff recommend the board retain the existing hedge accounting requirements unchanged in Section 12. So I'll hand over to the board again for discussion on this recommendation.
This time I agree unconditionally. And the main reason for me to agree with the staff recommendation is that I think if you look at where the IFRS 9 hedge accounting changes make the most difference, it's really where you've got more complicated hedging strategies where it may be possible to do things you couldn't do using simpler methodology. And so for me, I don't think there'd be much difference in the information that would be provided to investors depending on an update versus what's in the SME standard. So for that reason, I agree with your recommendation.
Thanks. I was actually going to say pretty much I agree on the same basis. I mean, I think to me, when these were drafted, it was exactly that, the transactions that people were using. I don't think they need the complexity that's in IFRS 9. Also, the fact that we're still just permitting for people to do it, not requiring it. I mean, the feedback we've gotten, we know in practice, there are not a lot of people doing hedge accounting. They may be doing economic hedges, but they're not doing the accounting to go with it, so I would support that.
Thank you, Bruce. Can we hear from Anne?
Thanks, Andreas. Yes, I also support the staff on this. We've got three clear options. We wouldn't be going for the removing. It's not appropriate. There are some entities that are using Section 12. We heard that. And it would be appropriate that we stay with our Section 12. To do an alignment with IFRS 9 would seem to be overkill for what's required here. The benefits that would come with taking on the hedging from IFRS 9 doesn't seem to be appropriate for the audience that we're looking at. I think there'd be complexity without benefits, so I do agree with the staff recommendation. I think it's appropriate for what we've got. We're trying to capture the middle ground, if you will, for these SMEs who are pursuing some degree of hedging activities. So that the proposal seems to be the best solution, thinking about costs and benefits. I did think also about comments that were made in relation to 30A, and a couple of speakers mentioned that there could be some entities that would want to avail themselves of the new standard for the reduced disclosures, for taking full IFRS with reduced disclosures. And I thought that that would also apply here if there were entities that needed to be engaged in the hedging of IFRS 9. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Tadeo?
Thank you, Andreas. I support staff's recommendation, and I fully agree with what Anna just said. And I just reinforce that I still agree with the staff recommendation based on our decision that we are going to drop the fallback to IFRS 9. I mean, that if it doesn't, because in some moment here on the paper we discussed this, I don't think we can drop the fallback and keep the current text of the hedging accounting in section 12. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more? That seems to be the case. Are we ready to take a vote?
Can I see who's in favor of the staff recommendation?
12.
Well done. Full score. Thanks, Michelle. And over to Wendy.
Agenda paper, now we move to agenda paper 13C. This paper asks the board to decide whether to propose an amendment to the IFRS for SME standard to align with the IFRS 13. Considering the feedback on the request for information and the recommendations of the SMIC. In the request for information, we sought views on four elements. First, aligning the definition of fair value in the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 13. Second, aligning the guidance on fair value measurements in the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 13. So the fair value hierarchy incorporates the principles of fair value hierarchy set out in IFRS 13. Third, include examples that illustrate how to apply the hierarchy. And finally, move the guidance and related disclosures to Section 2 of the IFRS for SME standard. The overall feedback supported the first three elements discussed in the request for information. However, respondents to the request for information and SMIC members expressed mixed views about moving the guidance and related disclosure requirement to the Section 2 of the IFRS for SME standard. The staff analysis applied the three alignment principles of relevance, simplicity, and faithful representations, and support the staff recommendation to align the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 13 for the first three elements. Applying the principle of relevance, the staff noted that the fair value is a pervasive definition, and IFRS for SME standard already requires or permits entities to measure some aspects at fair value. So the subject of fair value measurements and disclosure requirements is relevant to SME. Applying the principle of simplicity, the staff think that simplifying the definition of the fair values and the fair value hierarchies may create confusion to users and therefore not improve the faithful representation. However, the staff would consider proposed simplified disclosure requirements proposed in the exposure draft subsidiary with our public accountability disclosures when aligning the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 13. Finally, applying the principle of faithful representations, the staff think that aligning the definitions of fair value and the fair value hierarchy in the IFRS for SME standards would enhance disclosure about fair value measurement that will help users of SME financial statement to assess the valuation techniques and inputs used to develop this measurement. Regarding the fourth element, the location of fair value guidance and related disclosure requirements. Many respondents support moving the guidance and related disclosure requirements to Section 2 of the standard. However, other respondents and some SMIC members have a different view and suggested the requirements and guidance are instead moved to a separate section within the IFRS for SME standards or a subsection of Section 2. Because they think the fair value measurement is not a pervasive principle under the IFRS for SME standard. The staff have considered consequences of possible alternative for the location of the fair value guidance and disclosure requirements. So the first one, moving the fair value measurement and disclosure requirement to a subsection of Section 2 or to an appendix of Section 2, may not have the same status as other requirements and cause confusion for users. And moving the fair value measurement and disclosure requirement to a new section of IFRS for SME standard could emphasize the relevance of the fair value guidance across the IFRS for SME standard. while living is sufficiently distinct. It will also solve stakeholders' concerns on the location of the disclosure requirement. Therefore, the staff recommend the board move the guidance and disclosure requirements for fair value to a new section with a deferred decisions on whether to locate this new section after Section 2 or elsewhere in the standard. How this new section will be located and numbered will be addressed in a future paper. And I now hand over to the board for discussion. And the question for the board is set out on page 22 of the agenda paper.
Winnie? Mary, please.
Winnie, generally I'm supportive of the staff recommendations, but one thing I wanted to flag is a concern about examples. Now, if I look at the wording of paragraph 62 of the paper, the wording implies that what we'll do is make a selection of the examples that are in IFRS 13 and include them in the relevant section of the IFRS for SMEs. And I'm okay with that, but if we're thinking about developing wholly new examples, I have a very high level of concern. And that's because I think for very good reasons, and I'm supportive of it, I think we're going to get an exceptionally high level of alignment between IFRS 13 and this section of the IFRS for SMEs with the definitions, the hierarchy, the guidance. And that means that any example that we develop in the context of the SME standard, I think would be expected to also apply to anything applying IFRS 13. So if we're developing something new, I think we'd have to get very broad input, including those who don't think about using the IFRS for SMEs. And I think it would be, therefore, a high cost and maybe high risk to in effect, add examples to IFRS 13 at this point in time. So I'm fine with selecting examples from existing IFRS 13 examples and moving them into the standard. I'm very hesitant to develop any new examples for purposes of the SME standard.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, are you there?
Thinking about Mary's comment. Couple of things I was going to say. So firstly, I support what the staff are saying. I mean, to me, fair value is one of those cornerstones of what we do, and I think fair value is fair value. So, I mean, I don't think we could really come up with a different solution to what's in IFRS 13, so I'd be supportive of that. I also like the fact that, as you said, in the PIR of IFRS 13, it wasn't shown to be too cost burdensome on anybody. So I think in preparing some of the disclosures, I think we can use the feedback from that in terms of doing those. On the second one, I guess simplification, when we started asking about the alignment of the guidance with that, my view on that was I think we do need to do the alignment, but I think what I would want to see is a little bit of an explanation around how we're going to tie in, especially when you've got level 2 and level 3 around the cost-benefit exemption in the IFRS for SME standard. That's obviously a lot more prevalent there than we would have seen under IFRS 13. So I guess we just need to unpack in my mind a bit more about how those two are going to interplay. Because otherwise, I think what you'll find is the danger to me is everybody will be happy at level one. Anything else, they're just going to say, well, cost benefit, we're not going to do anything, which means we're kind of going to end up not having anything other than unless something's quoted. So I think we'd need to think something about that. And I think that maybe is something where it's slightly unique from the full IFRS that was being mentioned. As to where to put some of the guidance, I mean, the other thing I was going to point out is remember, the SME standard relies heavily, what's used very heavily in practice is the education guidance. So we have got that as a mechanism to rather say, well, if we feel there's additional guidance or some other examples or something may need to be there. And taking on board Mary's concern that I actually think is a very good one around being careful between IFRS 13 and this, we can use the education material for that. Whether it's authoritative or not, in practice, people refer very heavily to that education material in terms of what they're looking at. So I think there's an opportunity for us to maybe give guidance where we feel this may just be more SME-specific in terms of what they want. On the last one, in terms of the structure, I do agree we should put this in a new section. But as I've had discussions with staff before, I reserve where I would put that. I think we need to look very carefully at how we would structure that. But yeah, I guess on the home support. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Bertrand.
I agree with the staff recommendation. I appreciate Bruce's comments on educational material, but at the same time, probably some more general comments on educational material as a whole. They are often missed. Maybe it's not the case for IFRS for SMEs, but at least for the IFRS full package, they are often missed. So in terms of communication, it may be not ideal. And above all, their status is absolutely unclear. And I'm always reluctant to use educational material on top of examples within a standard. But that's more a general comment. Maybe it's irrelevant when it comes to IFRS for SMEs, but...
Point noted. Tadeo.
Thank you, Andreas. In general, I support the staff's recommendation. I think that IFRS 13 doesn't determine whether an asset or liability should be at fair value. It will be decided by each, in the case of IFRS for SMEs, each section. Therefore, this is similar to what we have for IFRS full. Having a separate section makes more sense, at least for me. One point that everybody's touching on it is related to illustrative examples. One thing that is, at least for me, is trying to understand when the illustrative example is part of the standard or whether this will be the outside the text of the standard, as we have illustrative examples in IFRS full, the same for IFRS for SME. And that is a very good point of discussion in terms of educational material. I think that the users and the preparers, actually, when I say users, I'm talking about everybody, stakeholders, applying IFRS for SMEs, I think that the educational material, it's maybe a better strategy for making them apply and become knowledgeable of IFRS for SME. Why, for example, IFRS full, suppose that companies applying IFRS full, they have enough knowledge, structure, to deal with these standards. It's different, in my view at least, people or stakeholders using this standard. Then I think that is a very good idea, working with professional material. But again, I would think twice, because here, when I read the paper and mention, including some illustrative example, it's not clear for me whether they are going to be like an appendix of a new section, or it will be embedded in the section. I mean, that it, for me at least, it makes a big difference, because the more we put on it, the more complex the standards become. That's, I think, that should be a right balance between these two options here. Thank you.
Thanks, Tadeo. Sue?
I think building on comments made by others, particularly Mary and Bruce, I think I'm cautiously supportive of the staff's recommendation, maybe not conditionally, cautiously, because I think what you're recommending is sensible, but it's the most difficult thing to do, because we want to sort of get the same meaning as in the big book, but using lots of less pages, and that's where it becomes the trickiest, and particularly if you use the hierarchy, for example, that Bruce was talking about, the sort of distinction between level 2 and level 3. We know that people find that a hard distinction to make when they use the big book. So if we write some more stuff about how to think about that in the little book, people are going to use it. And similarly with examples, if there's new examples over here, they're going to suddenly gravitate to them, especially if we've said, oh, it's the same thing, but it's just explained a bit differently. And so I think we need to be... The more that we can use materials that are in the big book and sort of relocate them or sort of trim them down a little, but it's totally consistent, that that's probably the safer. But even that, I think we have to be careful not to be a, you know, misery. But it's one thing to say the definition's the same, but the definition, when it's applied, is applied with pages and pages of guidance on how to think about what these different phrases in the definition mean. And if you pick the definition up and you don't have all of that attached, you might get to a different conclusion. And so getting the balance right between not making it too difficult, getting to the same outcome, and not sort of providing a whole load of materials that everybody are using the big book is suddenly going to rush to use and get a different answer. It's a really tricky thing to do. So I think it's a good objective, but I think we need to be careful, and we probably need to make sure that people who use the big book would probably say, yeah, I'd get the same answer even if you showed me these materials. So we're not changing something over here, and we probably need to do a sort of cross-check. So I agree with the objective.
Thank you. I support all recommendations included on this paper, especially about the first point. Simplification will create complexity in practice, because what we want is we want SME to apply the exact same concept of fair value in their practice. So if we start creating something additional or something a little bit different to make it more understandable, then I mean, if I consider how that will translate into another language, the second language, in that case, probably people start looking for another word or another expression to explain exact same thing about the fair value. So I think we should use a consistent definition here. And I also think I fully agree with what Sue, Mary, and Bruce already mentioned. I think it's really helpful to select a couple of examples from the full IFRS standards in the context of the SME. But if we include further example, in that case, maybe people will stop and thinking about what the full gap user need to think about that example at the same time if they consider similar fact pattern exist. So I think it's more helpful to deliver the consistent message and the consistent example. But at the same time, it might be helpful to consider some educational material to explain in the context of SME how they can use the exact same concept in their practice.
Thank you, Erika. Jinja?
Thank you, Andreas. I also support the staff's recommendation and the direction, because my starting point that if there is assets in SMEs and listed companies which apply IFRS 13, I think the fair value should be same. Otherwise, it will cause confusion, you know, to the users. So even with fair value, you know, financial instruments or investment property, other things. So just to build on what Mary said, that if we are introduced examples, I think the point Mary mentioned is that actually we would like to that those fair value measurements outcomes should be same if we try to measure same assets or liability, you know. So I agree. So this is I agree with the staff's recommendation. Try to align the definition of fair value, because it's clear. I think it's clearer than previous definition. And then, if we are going to introduce the fair value hierarchy, so mentioned that actually in practice, because there are so many paragraphs in IFRS 13, but in principle, if we are going to introduce, we should introduce three hierarchy, as same as IFRS 13, in order to avoid a different outcome of fair value measurement results. And also, I agree with that we should introduce some, you know, examples, but hopefully those examples should be same to illustrate how fair value hierarchy will apply. But we should avoid additional complexity in this section, not try to make sure this section too big, too complicated. Try to just to bring some example to illustrate how fair value hierarchy will work. In terms of separate section, I agree with the staff's recommendation, try to introduce the new section, because the request for information will recommend to include those fair value measurements requirements in the section 2. But I just double check again, because section 2, the title of section 2 is about concepts and the pervasive principles. But in relation to the fair value measurement, actually we're not only to introduce new definition, we are also introduce new guidance, new disclosure requirements. Sometimes I think some of the elements will not fit into section 2. So I think in order to give more, you know, provenance and to help prepare us to find those guidance, I support staff to develop a new section to the IFRS for SME standards to address those guidance of fair value measurement.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job.
Tom.
Yeah, so I'll echo people's concerns that if we write simpler language, that it not be something that would create a different view of what's happening. And I particularly was taken with Rika's note about, you know, every time you use a different bit of language, you increase the risk of a different translation. Again, coming from Canada, I know how hard the ACSB works to get exactly the same meaning in the French and English to the reader, not in the person who wrote it. So that's a challenge, and I think one that we should really keep in mind. I just had a small thing. I agree with, on balance, everything. I did find, though, there's a bit of a choice. I like the idea of bringing it early. It may not be a principle, but it's fundamental. It's fundamental to many standards, and so I kind of like early. On the other hand, if we go early, the suggestion is to make it two-way. So this would be an innovation. We don't have any A's on any other pair, sections, do we?
No.
So this will be the first A. Like we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just numbers.
So
anyway, just a note of caution about when we create things like A's and, you know, A1s, and it doesn't facilitate an easy, you know, search of the document by somebody who's new to the thing. It's nice to just have numbers that go consecutively.
In the right order, even.
There's been quite a significant point amongst the team, and we've got to think about it carefully, whether we introduce a new section, whether we combine sections. So it is a paper. It does say a deferred decision, so we may have to bring the numbering of the SME standard back to the board at some stage.
It doesn't need a board decision.
Minor issue, I'd say, but anyway,
point taken.
I'm generally supportive of where the staff wants to go, but I agree with Sue that we have to exercise caution here. And I could put myself behind two lines of thought. One is completely conceptual, then this becomes a complete no-brainer. How could you have different concepts using the same terminology? How could you use different examples? So I think then you tick just the boxes and be there. The question I would have is a practical question. If Bruce is right, and I have no doubt he is, in saying that people generally refer to the education material and probably not so much to what's in the text, which is just normal, are we sure that by updating the section in this way, how it is produced, this will really change anything? Or are people just continue looking at the examples? And if I then couple that with the wish to take the examples from the existing IFRS 13, would we have an example on a structured note or decommissioning liability or on research and development projects? I mean, these examples were designed for big gap companies, right? The question is, how much do they actually talk to the problems that SME faces? So I think that we ought to be very careful. If we can, obviously we should draw on those examples. But if we simply don't have anything in here that would talk to the context of an SME, I'd rather be inclined to develop something. So I'm a bit torn between the practical side of it, because I have some doubts whether we will really make such a big difference by updating it. We will satisfy ourselves, no doubt about that, because we have updated the section from a conceptual perspective. But I'm a bit hesitant as to what the practical outcome will really be. Sue.
I agree with you. The thing that I was wondering about was how applicable the examples would be, because they've been designed for, I haven't looked again, but I'm from memory, for some of the trickier aspects of application, which are probably for more complex situations than the ones we might be thinking about. So that's why I'm a bit sort of assuming we'd be compelled to write some more relevant ones for SMEs. But if we do do that, I do think we need to talk to stakeholders to make sure that that isn't, you know, news to people who are applying IFRS 13 already with established practice. Mm.
Which is, I think, a fair reminder.
Just on that point, I think the extreme end of process, and I want us to think about this rather than concluding now that I want to do it, is to think about proposing consequential amendments to IFRS 13 to add the examples to IFRS 13 at the same time we propose them in the for the SME ED, because I think it's only by proposing changes to IFRS 13 that we will get stakeholders who focus on IFRS 13 application to think about the implications of those examples and just get all the input at one time. So just, my, you know, my comment is think about whether it would make sense to almost do a consequential amendment proposal for IFRS 13 if we develop new examples that are more relevant for SMEs, because they still would apply, you know, somebody applying IFRS 13 would have, for example, decommissioning liabilities.
But how would you envisage, would that work from a due process consideration? Because those companies that apply Big Gap usually don't comment on the IFRS for SMEs or other way around. So if we are developing a final standard for the IFRS for SMEs without having exposed the change to IFRS 13...
That's what I'm saying. At the same time as we expose the ED for the IFRS for SMEs, an exposure draft of proposed additional examples for IFRS 13.
Okay. All right. Shall we try and see whether we can do a bulk vote, or would you prefer to that we vote on A, B, C, D?
Go for bulk.
Yeah? Okay. Shall we try a bulk vote? So can I see, with keeping the cautionary notes in mind?
Yeah, I was going to say, how do I put my hand up cautiously?
So maybe the caution could be that if we develop new examples, we bring them back to the board.
Yeah.
Not just the examples, it's also how we approach the definition of the
guidance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In relation to the examples, I think there are two ways. One is that just add some example to illustrate, as you said, that how the hierarchy will work. Another is that develop an example, try to address various, you know, situations where the standards, IFRS standard require some asset liability to be measured fair value. I think there are two different approach. So, but the question asked is that do I try to illustrate how the hierarchy will work, but not necessary to address all those scenarios. So there are two approaches. I think hopefully we focus on how to illustrate hierarchy will work. I think that will bring the issue a little bit simpler and easier for us.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Not sure whether I entirely agree that it will be easier, but let's see. Okay, can I see, with that note of caution, who could support the staff recommendation?
12.
Well done, Wingy. Shall we go to the next paper then?
Thank you, and then we move to agenda paper 13D. And this paper asks the board to decide whether to propose amending the IFRS SME standard to align with IFRS 14. Considering the feedback on the request for information and the recommendation of the SMIC, the request for information sought views on not including the requirements for regulatory deferred account balance in the IFRS for SME standard as part of this review. Overall feedback supported not including the requirements in the IFRS for SME standard for two main reasons. First, the board has an ongoing project on rate regulated activities, which could lead to the replacement of IFRS 14. Second, the topic is not common among SME. Rate-regulated entities are generally large-risk entities which do not meet the definition of an SME and are not eligible to apply the IFRS for SME standard. The SMIC also agreed that the board should not propose alignment with IFRS 14 as part of this review. and should wait until the project on re-regulated activities is completed before considering where to introduce requirements for re-regulated activities in the IFRS for SME standard. Given the feedback from respondents that the topic is not common among SME, the staff consider that the respondents are effectively saying the topic is not relevant to SME. Therefore, adopting the board's alignment approach, the analysis of other two topic alignment for other two alignment principles, simplicity and faithful representation, will not be undertaken as the relevant principle is not met. However, it is possible that SME would be within the scope of the draft standard for re-regulated activities. Therefore, the staff recommend the board revisit this topic in a future review of the IFRS for SME standard once the re-regulated activity project is completed. And now I hand over to the board for discussion. The question for the board is set out on page 6 of the agenda paper 13D.
Okay, thank you. And please.
Thanks, Andreas. I think the staff did a good job to summarise the issues as well. I do agree with their recommendation that we don't align for the reasons that they've summarised, mainly in paragraph 13. So the two main reasons that they've listed for us there in paragraph 13 are the ongoing project on rate regulation that we have and the fact that the topic is not common. But they've also given us feedback from people who have got different views to what the staff's proposing, and that's been helpful. But I, having considered the things that are mentioned, I still don't think that the arguments are strong enough or pervasive enough for us to take on this work at this time when we have a major project. So for most of the questions to do with the IFRS for SMEs, I haven't supported pushing things off into the future, but this is one where I do support taking it to the future because we've got a major project and I don't think it would be appropriate use of board or staff time to be trying to align with IFRS 14 at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Bruce.
Thanks. I'm just going to cautiously agree with the staff, and the reason I say cautiously is I'd like us to hold this off in terms of a discussion when we get to discussion around the scoping. I mean, I personally believe there are certain industries that just for us to try and fit into the standard are going to become very difficult, and I think this is one of them. I think, for example, trying to do something around IFRS 17 will be another. I think there are just certain industries that I think the complexity of trying to squeeze what we've got in the big standards into these is going to be very difficult. So I'd be very supportive on the first hand of clearly not aligning now. But I think when we start discussing the scope, I'd question whether or not these types of industries, given we've got such a comprehensive standard coming out on rate regulation, whether we actually think these types of industries should be in the standard in the first place. Yeah.
Tadeo.
Thank you, Andreas. I support the staff recommendation. I fully agree what Anna said, and I will just add the fact that IFRS 14 is a temporary standard. It is applied for first-time adopters. I mean, bringing this to IFRS for SME, it will not make life simple. I think that makes more sense to wait for the completion of the project on rate-regulated activities to bring this to IFRS for SME standard. Thank you.
Thanks,
Tadeo. Nick. Thanks, Andreas. So I also agree with the staff recommendation, but really just for information, there are some large unlisted rate-regulated entities out there. They're not all in the arena of the public market. So I think we just need to be careful how we position that in this respect. They may be very small as a proportion of the total number of SMEs by number, but there are some significant unlisted businesses out there in this area.
Can I just test my understanding? Is there anything that we could do when we look at the definition in terms of public accountability? Because if I think of rate-regulated entities being often large utility companies, could they probably stray into that area? I mean, we currently link it, obviously, to being listed on a market.
So we have had some feedback on the scope. So the definition of public accountability, we're going to bring a separate paper back. Because if there are particular areas, and Michelle's going to lead the work in that project, we can feed them in and then we'll look at them. But I actually think in the basis we do address
large public utility entities, and we actually say they are within the definition, so that would be an explicit change.
Yeah, yeah. Which would then obviously bring to the fore Nick's comment. Any further comments today? Are we ready to vote? Let's see who supports our recommendation. With that note of caution, please.
12.
Okay. Would you rather recommend that we break here, or would you say you give it a start?
I think we'd be better to break, because the next paper is probably the most complex of today's papers.
Okay.
And it's the final one as well. So.
Okay, let's do that then. So we break for 15 minutes then. Thank you.
Thank you very much.